All right, Alexander, let's talk about three news topics, and they're all related. Three countries, actually, and they're all around the same type of news topic. Once again, to all our viewers, Alexander, let's not get into the science of this, because we will, without a doubt, get banned, censored, deplatformed, demonetized, placed into exile on some remote island if we dare mention some of the words that we could mention. So we'll be careful on the wording. We'll stay away from the science. And we'll talk once again, politics, government, the effects on society as to what's going on in these three countries, why this is happening, why the governments are taking such strange action, because it does seem strange to me given the numbers that I have seen, but really draconian measures. And we'll start, the three countries that we will examine are South Africa, which is now appearing to come out of the lockdown a little bit, but they were under what seemed to me like martial law, military law forever, 6 months it seems. Really brutal type of lockdown. And no one really talked about South Africa. A lot of people kind of forgot South Africa. And they have many other problems, really deep societal problems that are going on, that people are having a hard time there. So this pandemic did not help and the lockdown did not help. Then we have to talk about what I think is an interesting story, which is New Zealand, which did probably one of the best jobs in the world of tackling this crisis. And all of a sudden, they have very, very few cases, but they went into a kind of lockdown as well. Over 4 cases, from what I understand. And then we have to talk about, of course, Melbourne and Victoria and the fact that things are getting really, really scary there, I think, for the people of Victoria and the people of Melbourne, which is a big city of around 5 million people. And from what I'm reading, the videos I'm seeing, things are difficult there. And a lot of people are having a hard time understanding why, given the fact that, once again, you don't have a huge spike of cases. But, I mean, the lockdown there seems crazy. And I'll preface this, Alexander, before you get into these three stories. Tackle them in whichever order you want. I'll preface this by saying, guys, this is what we're reading. This is what we're seeing. In this video, please, you know, comment. People that are in Australia, South Africa, or New Zealand, tell us how it is on the ground. You are, you know, you are our eyes and ears as to what is happening. You know best as to how things are. We're just going to report what we're reading, what we're seeing, and hopefully we get it right, Alexander.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say straight away, all of these actions that we've seen in these three countries smell of panic. I mean, this is what it looks like to me. Governments that really don't know what they're doing, and they're always reaching for the most extreme solutions. They always act completely disproportionately when they're faced by these kind of problems. And that's what they're doing. Now, let's talk about South Africa first. South Africa is a profoundly troubled country. We know that its long history of, you know, racial division, of apartheid, of, you know, resistance wars and things. There's been this huge overhang of problems. There's major problems in the economy, which there have been for a very long time, which have been building up. There is a major problem of crime and law and order, and there is huge corruption within the government, with the previous president, I mean, essentially removed because he was seen as being, you know, extremely corrupt. And a relatively recent change of power there to the new president, Mr. Ramaphosa. So we have a country that is already, dare I say it, unhappy. It's a country where a lot of things have gone wrong. And how do they react when they are faced with the problem that, you know, the pandemic poses? They react in the most extreme way. They impose this extraordinarily ferocious lockdown. It reminds me, I have to say, of India, which did exactly the same thing. Lockdown in India proved unsustainable and completely failed because of the brutal way it was imposed and the fact that it was done without any real thinking or planning or proper approach to it. And it seems to me that South Africa sustained it longer, but essentially it's the same thing. I mean, I don't really see that the South Africans have achieved anything as a result of the lockdown, because they haven't used the space that the lockdown is supposed to give you. A lockdown is only supposed to be in force for a relatively short time to give you time to organize your health service, set up proper testing systems, all those kind of things. That's the theory anyway. Well, that's the practice is another matter. South Africa, it hasn't, it seems, been the practice. They just imposed a lockdown, imposed it almost indefinitely. Now it's, I don't think they're softening in it. I get the impression it's crumbling and they've gained nothing from it. So that's South Africa.
They say their economy, is about to break.
Completely disintegrated, as by the way, India's economy also took a colossal hit. I mean, it seemed as if it was the way these very fragile governments, because, you know, in government in India, government in South Africa is fragile, wanted to assert itself by a kind of display of power and doing the sort of tough organizational things or really beyond them. So instead, they went for this massive, draconian, authoritarian response, which in the case of India, they couldn't sustain. And then the case of South Africa has done nothing but harm. I mean, I have to say that because that's how it looks to me. I suspect, by the way, there may be another factor, which is that Ramaphosa, who's the new president, wanted to distinguish himself from earlier presidents like, Mbeki, who was a president, you know, of South Africa, who famously was skeptical about AIDS. So I think, you know, he might want to show that he's somehow different and follows the consensus. But as I said, it wasn't done with any real planning, any real thought, any real organization, and it's achieved nothing. Now, Australia and New Zealand are very different countries. They're both rich. They are part of the Anglophone world in a way that South Africa, though it's just an English-speaking country, isn't. They are, you know, countries which have strong civil services, wealthy people, well-organized health systems. And of course, what happened was that at the start of the pandemic, they seemed to be doing very well. And for a long time, there was lots of talk about how the Australians and the New Zealanders had handled the pandemic effectively, and especially in Britain, where we're very close to those countries emotionally and politically. You had all sorts of people saying, you know, why couldn't we have organized things, response to the pandemic in Britain, as well as they did in Australia and New Zealand. And I think what happened there was that the Australians and the New Zealanders said to themselves, we've done incredibly well, and we mustn't in any way tarnish this picture. So a few cases appear, and again, panic, extreme reaction, imposing lockdowns, which are not going to, I suspect, do much good, because I don't think there's any need for them. They looked completely disproportionate to me, putting people in very, very difficult positions, doing massive damage to the economy, undermining the authority of the government to achieve in the end very little, because that's what's going to happen in both of these two countries. I mean, you don't impose a lockdown because there have been four cases. This is a wild overreaction. If New Zealand was facing 5,000-10,000 cases a day, well, you know, it's a different scenario. But four, I mean, it's just excessive. And I have to say, it reminds me, and people in Australia and New Zealand may not like what I'm going to say, it reminds me now of China, because this is how China responds.
I was going to say the same thing to you, actually. That was my next question. You read my mind. Do you want me to give you that question?
Yeah, well, give me the question, please. Yeah.
Not New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand is a weird one because, like you said, four cases all in the same family, and the prime minister imposed a three-day lockdown. Really weird. I don't understand it, to be quite honest. But once again, people in New Zealand, maybe they can explain it in the comments. I think you're right, Alexander. I think it's a complete overreaction. And maybe it is just for optics to keep that reputation.
Yes.
Of being the country that handled the pandemic best.
Best, yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
Melbourne and Victoria, this reminds me of how China handled, I don't even know if I can say the word, the W Wuhan. Can I say it? Is this video going to get banned? The platform? I don't know. Anyway, I mean, it really does remind me of how draconian the measures were in Wuhan.
Absolutely.
What's going on in Victoria.
Yes.
let me read you what Robert Bridge wrote. Just the bullet points, real quick bullet points. This is how he sees it in Melbourne. No traveling more than 5 kilometers. That's 3.1 miles from their home. No traveling to other states inside the country. Those under house arrest are permitted to leave home for just 1 hour each day for exercise. Only one person is permitted to go shopping per family each day. Shopping is done within 5 kilometers from home. Unlike traditional prisons, visitations are not permitted to house arrestees. He's being a little tongue-in-cheek, Robert Bridge. But anyway, we get the point. All school activities are to be conducted online. All business services and construction are canceled. Organized sport canceled. In the case of funerals, 10 guests, no more. Forget about it. Weddings, forget about it. And a curfew from 8 to 5 a.m., from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. There was also a video, Alexander, real quick, going around of a kid, an 18-year-old, an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid. I guess his friends, two or three of his friends, they were in the park. And the police, like five, six, seven police, they handcuffed him. They forced him to wear a mask. I mean, it was really brutal how they were forcing the mask on him. And then they just carted him away. I mean, it was really, really bizarre. And he was just like a young teenager hanging out with his buddies.
Yes.
Really weird stuff. I mean, I don't know. Are there human rights issues here? Or I don't know.
There are. I mean, as I said, I come back to what I said. I mean, proportionality is always an essential element of human rights law. To me, this all looks completely and wildly disproportionate. Now, I am going to just say one little thing about the science. I mean, a curfew seems to me, an evening, a night curfew seems to me completely pointless, because it's now, I think, been fairly well established that people don't get infected by going outdoors and, you know, walking about. That isn't how it happens. Infections happen in indoor locations. And wearing, you know, facial coverings, masks outdoors, again, it isn't really going to do much difference. Indoors, maybe, but outdoors, not to that extent. So again, I have to say, I ask myself, is the situation with the pandemic so bad in Australia that it justifies these extreme steps? Well, it doesn't seem to me as if it remotely is, not remotely. And are these steps going to, are they really needed? Again, I don't think so. I mean, I speak with people who know much more about these things than I do. And, you know, what I say, I think, is based on the conventional views. So again, why these extreme overreactions? They smell once more of panic. And as I said, it does remind me a great deal of what happens in China, and not just in, you know, the city that you mentioned, Wuhan, but, you know, when there's a, you know, when five people turn up in Beijing, you know, they close down the whole of Beijing for and impose similar draconian measures there. I mean, that isn't going to help you deal with this pandemic. What it is going to do is undermine public support.
Final question, Alexander, and this is maybe a strange question, but maybe not. But how do governments walk this back? How will the government in Australia, the local authorities in Victoria and Melbourne, how do you walk this back after you've imposed such draconian measures? How do you reel this back? I know how China can do it. And there's no problem because their system of government is different. But how does supposed liberal Western democracies come back from essential military martial rule and go back to the way things were? And is what we're seeing in Melbourne a test case of how we're all going to be living in the West in a liberal democracies every time a crisis happens? It doesn't have to be a medical crisis either. Maybe a, God forbid, maybe a terrorist attack, maybe something else that, you know, they concoct or they think of. Is this how it's going to be all the time?
Well, I mean, it seems to me what this is a symptom of, and this is perhaps a sign that this is a sign of things to come, the shape of things to come, is that governments are losing confidence in their own ability to handle situations. So they always and automatically reach for the most extreme solutions when they feel that something is happening over which they don't have complete control. Now, can I just say, we are now in August. We are in the eighth month in most of the world of this pandemic. By now, proper systems ought to exist to deal with it. We ought to have a consensus on what to do in particular situations. We ought to have things properly organized. Governments ought to have proper concepts of how to respond. I don't see that anywhere. No one is learning anything. They're simply reproducing these responses whenever, as I said, anything seems to go wrong that might, you know, scare them a little. And I have to say the same. I think you're absolutely right. If there's a, say, a violent attack, if there's a, you know, terrorist attack, well, maybe they will react in the same way, because that seems to be the only thing they know how to do. They don't seem to be able to organize, prepare health systems, prepare, you know, testing systems, organize things in an efficient way anymore. In this particular case, and I'm not going to, you know, say which vaccine or treatment is the right one, because I don't know. I think medical science is starting to get on top of this problem, and I think that over the next few weeks, months, we will see it begin to abate as a health problem. But as a future lesson of how ineffectual and incompetent government has become, not just in a few countries, but around the world, well, there you have it. I mean, you see it all. You see a country like New Zealand wildly overreacting to just four cases. You see a country like Australia in the eighth month of the pandemic reacting in this extraordinary way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess my main concern is that this has nothing to do with a health issue. What we're seeing played out, you know, the way these governments are reacting is a test run. And that's what worries me. It's a test run of how we will be governed.
That's exactly what it is. It's the shape of things to come. I mean, this is how we're going to react to everything, it seems. Whenever there's a, you know, an incident of one sort or another, and a panic descends and things fall apart. And governments do, you know, unnecessary and cruel and disproportionate things. I was reading Patrick Hoban, who is this British journalist who runs for The Independent, and he was talking about how the Irish government in the 1950s dealt with the outbreak of polio in Western Ireland. This is when Ireland was a desperately poor country, and how much more efficiently and sensibly they dealt with it then as compared to the chaotic way they deal with things now. But I mean, that seems to be exactly how it's shaping out. And it won't just be pandemics, it will be all kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. It will be all kinds of things. That is the worry. That's the worry. All right, we'll leave it there. Real quick, like, share, hit that subscribe button if you're not subscribed to the channel. PayPal, Patreon, subscribe, star. Help this small channel out if you can. And of course, Durant Shop. This is my mug, my magic mug for today, which is Serbia.
And this is America, and this is Greece. And you can see Greece is a little smaller than America, because we are also making smaller mugs now for people who want, you know, a demi-tasse of stronger espresso-like coffee. So we have mugs in two forms, but they're all phenomenal and magnificent. And you'll find enameled mugs too. And if you can't find the flag of your own country, just wait a little, because almost certainly it will come. And if it's not there soon, well, just drop us a line. And we've also got our amazing shirts, and Alex is expanding the range of those, and they're becoming better all the time. And we've also got our, you know, hats, amazing new hats too, which you can also find. And of course, we also have our great range of ebooks, so you can find them all in our shop. You can support us at the Durand by buying these things from us at our shop, and at the same time, you can be the owner of these great things. So Alex will tell you how to do that.
Just go to Durand Shop. You'll find the link in the description box down below. We'll leave it there. Good night, everybody.